welcome once again to the Earth Mystery Show. I'm Haynes Ely, and I've got George Ure on the phone, and we're going to have a fun talk today about people-nomics and urban survival and all kinds of good stuff that KVMR listeners would love to hear about. George, are you there?
Nope, I'm someplace else.
All right. Glad to find you out there in the ether.
Yeah.
We've had Cliff High on the show a couple of times. Very popular guest. Everybody loved his webbot predictions. I call him the guy with the rickety time machine.
Yep.
And you are involved with Cliff. Now tell me, what is your involvement?
Well, it started off as a very strange relationship from the get-go. I had just finished up doing a turnaround for a higher education institution in the Bay Area in 2001, mid-2001 to late 2001. And while I was there, writing a daily website on the economy, urbansurvival.com, which is a funny story in itself. That started off as a master's in business administration capstone project. Anyway, so I get this strange letter from a guy who says, kind of with a think tank up here, and up here being the Pacific Northwest, he said, I've come up with something called Screwy Theory 153. And it had to do with the idea that although individual people may not be terribly psychic when you start measuring onesie-twosies, as a group, there's a fair amount of distributed processing, if you will, that humans do, and they leak the future in some very interesting ways. And then he proceeded to tell me the story about Sun Microsystems and how he'd been coming up with hints about sun disease when he was actually looking for Sun University Networks information when he was working at a big company that excels and does wordy kind of things up in the Pacific Northwest. He was a SQL guru who got called in for big national insurance companies back in the days before SQL was fully developed as a database. In those days, there were problems with what are called the predicates, the underlying calculus to some of the database functions. Anyway, long story short, he had developed a way of using spiders to go out and literally read the internet and extract information from it using a language called Prolog and a bunch, you know, the usual suspect scripting languages like Perl and so forth, as well as a lot of, you know, C routines and this Prolog language. So we started corresponding about it, and in the spring of 2001, well, let's see, it was June of 2001, his work had started predicting a major shift would occur that would forever change the way all of us in the U.S. live. That's pretty preposterous. I mean, somebody sends you an email and says, by the way, your whole life is going to change inside the next 90 days. And I thought, yeah, whatever, whatever. But it was interesting enough that I wrote about it and went into some detail. And then along came 9/11. Needless to say, I woke up. My wife and I were living on our sailboat down at Oyster Point Marina in South San Francisco. Woke up the morning of 9/11, saw the buildings being hit by the airplanes live on CNN, being on the West Coast as we were. And I looked at it and said, you know, this guy up in the Northwest may be onto something. So one thing went to another, and over a period of, oh gosh, ever since middle of 2001, we've put some free stuff in advance of event that he has been generous enough to share. Probably the biggest recent one two big recent ones that we put out. One was the China earthquake, which we posted an urgent warning about on the Urban Survival site, literally 36 hours, I think, before the event. And we called it the wedding quake. It was curious because that's when George Bush's daughter, I forget which one it was, but one of his daughter, Jenna, I think, was getting married. And it was happening on that Saturday. And all of the linguistics kept popping up around wedding interrupted. And we thought, you know, well, isn't that strange that here in this three-day window we've got this wedding interrupted stuff? And it comes, you know, I was scanning the headlines like crazy at the time, thinking, There's got to be a big wedding, a celebrity wedding. There isn't going to be an earthquake in Texas. Sure enough, there was not. But after the China quake, you may remember 2 weeks later, we had those dramatic pictures come out of all those couples that were standing around the ancient church, I guess, built in the 1500s or whatever, and all the interrupted wedding commemorative ceremonies that were going on there. And I'm going, you literally could have picked my jaw up off the floor. It had dropped so far. Then the other one, I was on Coast to Coast, I think, their annual prediction show in January of 2008, and Cliff's work had pointed to a huge financial downturn to occur in October of 2008. And that's pretty outrageous, you know, 10 months out to go, no, October 8th looks like it. And that's when the big collapse will begin. Naturally, people were skeptical, and it's like, yeah, you know, 10 months and 1 week from, you know, the 1st of January, or 2nd of January in 2008. That's pretty preposterous, you know, to nail something that well. But sure enough, the Icelandic mess bubbled over, and it happened over the weekend of October 5-6. By 7, everybody was saying, oh, and 7th was a Monday, people were going, oh, my God, this is the real deal. And then on the 8th, that was, you know, okay, so we were off by 24 hours, but we were right by, you know, 10 months and, 10 months and a week in advance. And that's, you know, we've done that often enough that it's above statistical chance. But the problem is, nobody really seems to care. It's like, you know, Haynes, if somebody could say, Haynes, the sky is going to fall over North Dakota on this particular date, what do you do with that?
I guess Chicken Little.
Yeah, I mean, like, for example, we have a period coming up later this year where we're going to have, in the bottle space, it looks like as many as 6 or more great earthquakes. And when I say great earthquakes, I don't mean great like good time going to be had by all. I mean great like...
High number
or lots of dead. Haiti actually qualifies as great quake. Even though it's only a 7 and change on the Richter scale, so it's not from a geological standpoint. You know, if you're one of those guys that looks at Texas and doesn't see a state, and instead, you know, sees something like you know, the Edwards Plateau or the Central Texas Uplift, you know, you'll go no, Haiti's not a great quake, but in terms of loss of life, it certainly was.
Yeah.
So we're going to have maybe 6 of those, as many as 6, from July 7 through the end of the year, first part of next. So those are the kinds of. But again, you know, it's, we haven't been exactly embraced by the intelligence community, even though we got the that 10 airplane plot. What was that? Around 2004, 2005. Where they busted up the group that was going to try and hijack 10 airplanes and fly them to America. In the model space, that came up as 10 arrows toward America. But, you know, and I can't really blame the Admiral Poindexter types, because they're looking for specific drill-down correlative information. And that certainly makes sense. I mean, the problem with Cliff's work is you can't run out and arrest somebody, because it doesn't say this guy. It's all done at the archetype level. So
there was a spectacular miss, I would call it a miss, of November 25th that he predicted, you know, for 6 months some big event was going to happen November 25th. And
yeah,
that day came and went and nothing happened.
Yeah,
and
we'll miss. I mean, that's the problem with this. The hits are spectacular, and so are the misses. On the other hand, If we only limit it to what are the sure things, then nobody would ever make a prediction. And really, what we're trying to do is at least get some baseline in the field of predictive linguistics going. Predictive linguistics is an interesting thing, because how people refer to the future is always drifting around. And to the extent that it drifts around, that drift constitutes usable information. And that's really what we're trying to get to. There's just so little, though, in the formal literature about it. And what little there is, we've run into some Chinese spiders back in, 2003, 2004, where the Chinese were doing a similar kind of a linguistic spidering project, and they were making much bigger snips of code. We were only sampling like 20, 48 bytes, and the Chinese were doing much larger. They were doing like 1 megabyte, so they could get a whole deep context as to changes in language. But even so, it's like, okay, this is all interesting. But the real question is, how do we make money? Although Cliff never asked that.
I made a lot of money on the October 8th deal. I told my friends to short the market, and they were all looking at me like I was nuts. And I backed up the truck and bought put options on farthest out of
the
money.
Oh, you did?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so you're probably a happy reader.
I'm a very happy reader.
The same kind of thing is coming up now. What's really curious financially about what's ahead, and maybe, you know, who knows, maybe that's where predictive linguistics has some real value, because how do I say this without bragging, the Porsche 930 in my garage is a nice toy, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And we may be in a position to do that again, simply because we're quickly approaching an area where a number of things are all coming together. Predictive linguistics that Cliff does. Got a friend of mine by the name of Robin Landry, who's manages private accounts out of Shawnee, Oklahoma. You know, he's been principal in his own firm and so on and so forth. But he's just, you know, kicking back and managing money, because you know, he's another one of those MBAs who doesn't go out and wave his paper around. He actually tries to, you know, move the art and science of investing along. And he's done a lot of work on Elliott Wave and coincident technical indicators. And in his work, even though we're having a little bounce today, there's a very good chance in the next couple of weeks that we'll get down and test the 9,500 level. We may get one more pop up to maybe, 10,000, 11,260 or someplace in there before we really head down in earnest. But as the year wears on, Landry and myself are of the opinion that we could be looking at a Dow down around 4,000.
I think that Richard Russell said that a long time ago. He said that the price of the Dow and the price of gold would intersect at some point. They'd be the same.
Yeah, and I don't really expect that until maybe 2011, and I'll tell you why. Have you ever looked at the work that he calls himself Trader Bart, but it's nowandfutures.com?
I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, if you go to nowandfutures.com, you'll see a reconstruction of the very broad measure of money availability in the M3. For those not familiar, M1 is basically cash and equivalents and checking. M2 is cash equivalents and CDs and intermediate term deposits. And then M3 is kind of like soup to nuts, mortgages and whatever else. So, and every time you take out a loan, you're effectively helping create money. But what's happened is M3 is starting to collapse, which is very, very deflationary. And in addition, the December Federal Reserve G19 report makes it very apparent that consumer revolving debt, which is the credit card spending, you know, discretionary household play money kind of stuff, is actually contracting at an annual 18.5% rate. And so what I'm kind of expecting, based on both Cliff's work, Robin Landry's look at Elliott Waves, plus his own proprietary indicators, and then some just, you know, normally stuff that I don't pay much attention to. But, for example, Arch Crawford, who writes a letter called The Crawford perspective.
He's a pen pal of mine. Arch and I send jokes back and forth every day.
Oh, you're kidding?
No.
Oh, okay. So yeah, I mean, and he sits down in Tempe and chills out and has a good life. But he's a great guy. I guess you've followed his work long enough to...
Yeah, he predicts the worst astrological conjunction in a century is coming up in July of this year, I believe.
Yeah, end of July, first part of August, maybe not until September, but he says, if I recall correctly, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's the worst since 1776 in North America.
Yeah, a bad astrological time
bad woo-woo. Yeah. And so, how does an average guy play it? Well, anybody can go out and they can short the market. They don't have to actually, you know, sell a stock and then promise to deliver the stock later. Problem with that is it doesn't limit your risk. There's an old saying in investing: he who sells what isn't makes it good or goes to prison. I don't know if you've heard that one.
I haven't heard that one.
Yeah, it's a great one. But the way you do it, or the way I'm doing it, and I guess you've done it too, Haynes, is you see some of it. There are times to be wildly optimistic, and then there are times like now. What I've done is I've gone through the financial stocks, and I've seen in the Dow, just to keep big name stocks only in my portfolio, I looked at the financial component of the Dow and said, okay, when things were at their bottom of the crappiest back in May of 2009, right around the 10th or so of, I'm sorry, March of 2009, how low were some of these guys? And there are some very big national banks of America and some very expressive credit card companies that were at small fractions, I mean like one-tenth of their current price. Well, a fellow can buy at this point, you can go out to January of 2011, and you can buy puts on some of these expressive credit card companies, $22.50 puts and $20 puts, which means if the price of the stock, and in the case of this one credit card outfit, their stock's been up around $40 or so, $40 and change. And if we go back and test those old levels, a put option, which pays you everything under $20, could end up paying you $10 or $15 on a $1 for each dollar you put in.
Right.
So you have that kind of huge leverage. And this is once-in-a-lifetime kind of opportunity.
Well, I think when you mentioned credit cards, I would short GE. I mean, they've got $600 billion in debt, and no matter what they do to their balance sheet to try and look like they're making a profit, they're so far underwater that they're going to go to zero, I think.
Yeah, and unfortunately, they're not the only one. I mean, there are some big banks that one would have to consider shorting. One of the biggest banks in America has a countrywide mortgage subsidiary that's country space wide. that makes lawyers crazy when I'm specifically not mentioning people.
That's good of you not to mention those countrywide mortgage.
Those big national banks of America.
Exactly.
There are some stocks though that if a student of the market were to go back and look and say, you know, zoom in on what the valuations were in March, you could find some potential. I'm not saying go out and do it. This is not investment advice. I am not a registered investment advisor. I don't sell stocks. I'm an MBA. I'm a former news director. I just watch news and figure out how to use it, right? And there's nothing, sorry, that's an unregulated industry. Although arguably because of the lack of financial understanding many reporters have, maybe it should be regulated, but that's a whole other conversation.
I'm going to interrupt our conversation to tell the listeners this is the Earth Mystery Show on KVMR 89.5 FM. Our guest is George Uhr, and he has a great website called urbansurvival.com, And he also has a yearly subscription website called peoplenomics.com. And I highly recommend them both. I'm a subscriber, and I'm also a reader of Urban Survival. And George covers all kinds of stuff. We're just touching the top of the iceberg here about the stuff that he covers. And it's fun reading. And don't you have a book about how to live on $10,000 a year or less?
Yeah, I actually started that as a humanitarian project. It occurred to me a couple of years back, gosh, I want to say 2005 or so, 2006, that people did not understand the change that's going to have to go through America. And the change that goes through America is, okay, so Ben Bernanke writes a book about how to, you know, essays on the Great Depression. Very fine book on how to deal with depressions if you happen to be running a bank. You're not, Haynes. I'm not. So what does the average working stiff do when it comes to how do you make it through this thing? So I went through all of the cost-cutting things that I could collect. How to cut cost of food, how to cut cost of transportation, cut cost of energy, cut cost of, you name it. It's in this little book. And I charged $10 for it. And I figure, you know, I wanted to give it away free, but I'll tell you what I found. What I found is that if the book did not have its own website, liveon10,000.com, if the book was not free, was free, people would not place any value on it. And I thought, well, that, ain't that a curiosity? But you know what they say, an expert is somebody from 200 miles away you pay $200 a day to, or $200 an hour to. Sorry, it was $200 a day when I started in business. It's now $200 an hour. That gives you an idea of long-term inflation, right?
Right.
but all kidding aside, the book is very useful. And even today, if I had $10,000 a year to live on, I could live not a real fat life, but I could own property and so on and so forth, simply because I know where to go in America to look and acquire property on the cheap. And what most people do when they don't have money is they sit down on their fat butt. Well, that's nice if you want to have a fat butt, but if you want to really have a good quality life, you can do it on very little, provided that you don't sit on the couch. I work, even though I do fine, and don't have to worry about living on $10,000 a year, I'm still working anywhere between 12 and 14 hours a day, and I'm 61 years old. Now, people usually at 61 years old are, you know, screw work, go home, have a beer, go to bed early, or stay up and watch TV. Television is one of the most dangerous inventions ever, because it's conditioned American consumers to not be active people.
Buy and consume.
Yeah, buy and consume. I mean, we're almost a feedlot for you know, Chinese companies. You know, fatten up the American consumers, sell us more junk. And speaking of junk, you know, people don't demand quality, and I just, for the life of me, cannot understand why people don't demand quality.
They're just used to what they get.
But you can't do that. I mean, one of the things that was characteristic in the 1930s was fix-it shops. Do you know you cannot find a fix-it shop hardly anywhere in America?
You're right. Most of them have folded up.
Yeah,
they're manned by some guy 90 years old.
Yeah, right. But they're so rare, and you know, part of the reason is design. We've had a headlong rush into products that are all part of planned obsolescence. I mean, I'm sitting here in my office. I'm surrounded by four monitors. I've got one monitor watching the market, and it's all on one platform, you know, just a single computer. It's a super box, and it has lots of video cards in it. But
I bought it.
You did?
After I read your description of it.
You bought one too?
I bought one.
No, come on, Haynes.
No, it hasn't come yet, but I took your word for it.
Oh, yeah, it is.
And I've actually gotten flack from some friends saying, you bought a gaming computer? And I said, do you play games? And I said, just head games. I don't play games, but I'm wanting speed, and I want the ability to run 5 programs at once and run them all fast.
Oh, and run them all screaming fast. I've never had so much fun in my life.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear it.
You know, yeah. I mean,
I get so impatient with computers waiting to load some stupid program. I hate it.
Yeah. This runs as fast as the fastest computer I've ever owned, but it does it with 4 displays rolling. And being able to drag, you know, like I've got a scheduling program open. It's a clone of Microsoft Project, or is it Microsoft? Anyway, it's either Project or a clone of that, and I've got another one open with a website, and then on another window I've got email, and on another window I've got live streaming tickers on my option positions, and it really is. You know, people come into my office once in a while. I'm kind of an antisocial guy, but people who drop by come in and go, "Holy smokes! What are all those monitors for?" And then I explain, and they go, "Oh, well, I guess you need them." And most people, you know, alt-tab their way to death, and the technology is there, and you can buy, well, these 24-inch monitors I bought, Tiger Direct had them on sale for $159 a pop. And you know, you can load up on 4 monitors real quick doing that.
Indeed.
Anyway, but that's the, you know, it, but I'm, it, let me know your thoughts when you get your Screamer installed.
I will. I'm looking forward to it.
It's just blazing. You know, now I've got a problem, and I, you know, suppose most people do. Internet is now not fast enough for me.
Do you have the high speed DSL or whatever you need?
Oh, I've got a high speed microwave, straight to the backbone kind of a thing.
Hmm.
I'm 2 radio links from fiber onto the backbone, but that's not fast enough. I mean, you know, that's the problem when you're a hyperactive workaholic kind of a person. Good is not good enough. Fast is not fast enough. The day is not long enough, and I cannot schedule dying until I'm 87.
There you go. Put it on your schedule today.
Yeah. Well, no, actually, I'm trying to postpone it.
Our guest today on the Earth Mystery Show is George Ure, and I mentioned earlier his website, www.urbansurvival.com. Well worth looking at. It's a wonderful website. And he has a private subscription site, peoplenomics.com, $40 a year, which is extended essays from stuff that's on urban survival. And on the Urban Survival site, you can see a little bit of the predictions that Cliff High and George do from their web bots that go out and find changes in language all over the world. I wanted to tell the listeners, this is a membership show. Every year we have 3 shows where we ask people to join up and be members of KVMR. And I always offer some premiums for myself, not from the station. This is for me. A premium if someone calls 265-9555 or 800-355-5867 or pledges online at kvmr.org. I'll give you a bottle of 2007 Nevada City Winery Barbera, and this is a gold medal winner, double gold medal winner.
Really?
And not only double gold, but it won Best Foothill Winery Wine, and it won Best Barbera in California.
So no kidding.
I'll send you a bottle, George.
Oh.
But the listeners have to
become, no, I'll have to become members. That. That is some primo.
Yeah, the listeners have to pledge to join as a member, renew a membership or join as a new member. And the other thing I offer is an angel. I match anybody who becomes an angel. An angel is someone who pledges $365, dollar a day. And if a person is an angel, they get to be a broadcaster for an hour, meaning they can come do my show or any other show that they want to do that's okay with the station. And they get 8 CDs and a KVMR gear bag with all kinds of stuff in it. So it's a real good dollar a day use of your money. And if you want to be on the Earth Mystery Show or you want to be me for a day, I'll engineer and you can talk. So I will match you if you're an angel. So your pledge for $365 will be over $700, $720.
Wow.
If you call the station. So those are good pledges and good prizes for
prizes alone, dude.
Yeah, for
marvelous
for being
marvelous
a member.
You.
And I'm not sure in Texas if you have community radio stations like this. Ours is a really unusual one. We are completely volunteer. Like, I'm a dermatologist by trade, but I volunteer my time here. And
because you know what skinny is.
Yeah, I know what the skinny is. Yeah.
Sorry, couldn't resist.
That's all right. I've heard worse. And don't make any rash decisions is one.
Oh,
I
no,
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Oh gosh.
So anyway, in Texas, I don't know if you have stations like this. We're pretty unusual. We have volunteer broadcasters. We have all kinds of music shows and talk shows where people come in here and just do their stuff, like me coming in here. I've been doing this for 24 years, talking to people every Monday, like yourself. And it's such a wide variety of interests that you can just, you know, turn on KVMR on your computer, streaming audio, or turn it on your radio all day. And you actually get some kind of an education at the end of the day. You learn something. I learn something every day, either about new music styles or just stuff going on in the world that doesn't quite make it to the TV or the commercial radio stations.
And I guess that's, you know, the core thing with investing that has that it both has changed and it's also been forgotten. When I was first starting off trying to figure out how to make a couple of extra bucks, I wish somebody had sat down with me and given me the 5 golden rules of investing.
Well, give them to me.
Yeah, I mean, they're very simple. 1, spend less than you make. Save 10% of every dime you get your hands on.
Good call.
2nd one, reduce your standard of living below what you can afford all the time.
Another good one.
Pay cash. Don't buy stuff using bankster money, because banksters charge interest. Just to give you an idea, and most people never figure this stuff out, but if you buy a home on interest, ask them when you buy the home, or you can, you know, run it out in a spreadsheet or a mortgage interest calculator, you'll find that most people, even with today's low rates, are buying their home 2 and 3 times over by the time you put interest in it.
Oh, yeah. If you buy a $100,000 house, by the time you finish paying off your mortgage in 30 years, you paid $320,000 for it.
Yeah, and that's at low rates.
At low rates.
That's crazy. And I guess, you know, and people always say, oh, okay, George, yeah, whatever. But, you know, that you can accelerate that if you actually really want to reduce your debt. Many mortgages, I dare say most, will let you pop an extra 10 or 20 bucks a payment onto principal. And it's just a little blank on most mortgage payment forms. It's just additional payment on principal. And people generally don't do that. But if you just put like another 50 or 100 bucks a month to pay on principal, not as additional interest, but pay down your principal, you can get a mortgage accelerator program and run out your own specific, put in on mortgage accelerator software on the internet. It's all over the place. But you can cut the ultimate price of your home to probably 15 years without drastically impacting your lifestyle.
Yeah.
It just amazes me that people don't do this. But you see, what ends up happening is, and I saw this happen, my friends, my kids, and so forth, they fell into it. They would make a house payment the first year or two, and then because of inflation, the house payment was staying put, but their income went up, so they took on additional obligations. You know, let's buy cable now. Okay, let's buy cable. And then the next year it was, let's buy something else. Well, let's buy a gym membership. And pretty soon, your lifestyle seems to go up, but what you forget is you're paying this huge amount of interest. However, again, you have to balance it out. If you're in a period when inflation is really, really picking up, it makes a lot of sense to do that, because you are going to be paying it back with cheaper money. But now see what happens when we get to a point where real deflation is afoot. When real deflation comes along, the whole thing flips over, and you're going to be paying your mortgage back with more dear money, not cheaper money, more pricey money, and it's going to be a bigger fraction of your income. So what do? You should be reducing your lifestyle now. I don't have cable TV. I have something called free-to-air TV. I can pick up international programming, some English, not a lot, but language stuff.
Is this on a computer?
No! You can do that, too. Sure, you could hit Hulu and Film Hill and some of the others and watch, you know, whatever television you want. Buy a damn shortwave radio and listen to AM and FM radio stations for your news, or read urbansurvival.com. News is out there. You don't have to watch I hate to call them this, but the Ken and Barbie news shows that are on, you know, ostensibly newsy news that pretends that they report and you're supposed to ruminate or something. But they do slick packaging, don't get me wrong. But if you commute back and forth to work, you can get all the news you need in about a half hour. What you really need is context, somebody on your side who's not trying to whip you up so you can be a pawn of the powers that be. Left-right politics is terribly interesting for about 5 minutes a year, I find, the 5 minutes when I'm in actually pulling levers. And even that, I consider just encouraging them. The real battle is between the haves and the have-nots. And the haves have hijacked both the American political parties. In other words, essentially, because the lobbyists are trying to maintain good relationships on both sides of the aisle, it's almost like Republicans and Democrats have joint checking.
It does indeed. Let's get back to we were on point three about
economics.
No, that's okay.
Yeah, point three.
Point three was pay down your mortgage.
Yeah, point four. Don't buy anything that's stylish. People get into long-term financial commitments over issues of style that are ridiculous. My kids pointed this out to me when one of them had a $200 cell phone bill in a month and said, "Dad, can you help me out with a cell phone bill?" No, you need to feel the pain of what it's like to try and buy style. This is style. You own it. Have fun. National Bank of Dad isn't going to help you on this. And since then, my son has got his cell phone bills down to like $25 a month. My wife and I have a cell phone that we seldom use. It's one of those track phones, and every 4 months we'll buy a $25 card because the little track phone things are only good for, I think, 90 days.
Right.
But nevertheless, those 90 days cost us a whopping $25, so we buy $100 a year as our cell phone bill. I can live with that. That's not exorbitant. Why, even on $10,000 a year, a guy could afford $100 in a year for a cell phone, couldn't he?
Well, most of the kids nowadays are going crazy with texting.
Well, texting, and that's all more money.
Yeah, someone's got to pay for all that.
And surfing and all that other stuff. Go to a public library if you're trying to cut your internet costs down. There's all kinds of good content on the net. You just have to go looking for it and learn a few places. And that's number four. Number five, learn to self-educate. There is nothing more important than getting new brain food into your head every day. Try to find something pleasurable to put in the way of words. Try and find something pleasurable to put in the way of music. But every single day, Haynes, you should be feeding your brain. I mean, people make a big deal about eating healthy, right? What's more important than eating healthy? Thinking healthy. Because everything you are on the outside is a culmination of what you are on the inside. And if people don't, if they don't think healthy, and that means put some music in, something for the right side of the brain, maybe some poetry, and then some facts, some formulas, some math, some logical stuff, Your brain is not going to keep growing because it'll be processing the same garbage over and over and over again. So if you want to be successful, the simplest way to do it is change your thinking. And the only way you're going to change your thinking is by giving up being attached to to what people put before you. Remember the thing we just mentioned, point four, about style? Point five, develop independent critical thinking skills and feed your brain. There, how's that?
That's good, but back to the powers that be. You mentioned poisoning the airwaves with pseudo-news or whatever they want you to think. The average person, like you mentioned, sits on their couch and watches that crap and doesn't develop any powers of critical thinking. They will quote what they saw on TV last night as though it was the truth.
Yeah, it's kind of bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah, and so how do you train people to wake up and not believe that stuff?
Really, here's where it goes. It goes down to where are you in critical thinking? The critical thinking questions are, is this real? Does this matter? Is it valid? Does it apply to me? Has it been tested? And the most important one, is there some money on the table someplace on this one? Take global warming. Now I get a lot of heat, no pun intended, because I'm a little bit skeptical of global warming. The reason I'm skeptical is we have people that I call the carboneers, the guys who are the powers that be, representatives and powers, who are bound and determined to set up carbon exchanges and make lots of money by trading carbon credits, which the best description of carbon credit trading I've heard was it's like wife-beating credits. If you are this kind of a person and you want to beat your wife, well, if you pay $10 a month to a women's shelter program, then it's okay. Well, that's kind of how carbon credits work. I'm a farmer. I have 28 acres of land in East Texas, well, 29 acres in East Texas. I raise goats. I raise trees. Got a little garden. Okay, that's a typical little, you know, small farm operation. Not a lot of money in. A couple hundred bucks a year off the goats and, you know, a couple of more bucks off the trees and what have you. But the point is that carboneers are offering me basically a dollar per acre per year. And somebody was saying I might be able to get $5 per acre per year if I promise not to develop my land for 10 years. And I literally threw down this proposal and I said, are you kidding me? I have these acres, right? And an acre of land in East Texas is not expensive, maybe $3,000. But you go figure out what the interest is on $3,000 if somebody doesn't own it. And let's say, what, 6% simple interest, $180 a year, right?
Right.
So why are they offering me $5? My property taxes, even with an ag exemption, are many times that. Are these people on drugs? And yet the carboneers are going around trying to get farmers to lock up development of their land for 10 years and capture carbon. It's like, no, you're not trying to capture carbon, you're trying to capture idiots. There's more money made trading carbon credits, not by little guys like me who actually own small farms. The money's being made by the middlemen, the carbon traders, the guys that are trying to take. So when I look at a subject, now we get back to critical thinking, like global warming, I ask myself, is there money involved in this? Is somebody standing to make money if I go along with this premise? Son of a gun? Yeah, there are. There's carbon exchanges cropping up. Number one. Second point on global warming is the IPCC has been not only caught out on the temperature data, which came out just in time to ruin what was going to be a love fest and assigning the U.S. to participate in what I expect would be an unconstitutional treaty because it places restrictions on America from outside of America. And there's this whole unanswered question, at what point does international cooperation turn into a new level of government? You see, the real game here with global warming
is a carbon tax on the world.
And once you've got a carbon tax on the world, well, by God, Haynes, we got to have a world water tax because we have a global water shortage, don't we? Right. Well, and after that, Haynes, we're going to have to charge you for your air because you're creating carbon dioxide. Haynes, we have to have a global health tax to help the dying people.
Yep. Goes so, on and on,
and,
doesn't
and
it?
That's how the world gets taken over by a group of rich, powerful elites that are only interested in their own power, position, and so forth.
And
not saying that everybody's crooked, Haynes.
No, and the average do-gooder wants to do good, and they join on board because it sounds like a good thing.
It sounds really good, and it sounds high and holy until you turn your back on them and start asking the really hard questions.
Indeed.
You know, like you know, if you're such a do-gooder, how come you got a big house with a big energy bill and fly on a private jet?
Yeah.
You know, and some of these hard questions. Sorry, yeah. Not me.
We're going to have to come back and talk about this stuff a lot. But
yeah,
our hour is running down.
Yeah, and, sorry.
Well, let me just tell our listeners again. This is the Earth Mystery Show. Our guest is George Ure, U-R-E, and his website is urbansurvival.com, and he has a high-power version of that called peoplenomics.com. And if you go to urbansurvival.com, you can get a little hint of what we've been talking about today. We've only touched the top of the iceberg. George, it's been great talking to you.
Well, you have to ask me sometime about why I think Congress ought to be on eBay now that the Supreme Court has essentially said America's for sale to the highest bidder in their decision last week.
We'll do another show right now.
Okay.
I've got to move on. Thanks, George.
Go for it.
Appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me on.
Thank you for being on. Interesting guest, and he's got lots to say on his website. It's a fascinating every. I don't know how he writes so much every day. He writes pages of interesting economic and survival data and all kinds of stuff. But I wanted to remind you that this is a membership drive, and that we are driving to make what hundreds and thousands of dollars. I hope maybe $1.50, but you know somewhere in between. We're hoping for a big score today. And I mentioned I'm a serial contributor. I'm a life member. My late wife was a life member. My dog is a member. My cat's a member. I try to encourage everybody to be a business underwriter. I'm a business underwriter because that really helps your business, and it helps KBMR. And so I always offer to match an angel. I think the angel donation is one of the best ones because you get every day to thank yourself.